The labor movement faces great dangers. But to talk about the communists being a danger results merely in hiding the real threat. Labor is in danger of hostile legislation by the coalition of reactionaries in Congress, and labor is in danger of direct attacks by the open shop employers, by the reactionaries of big business. Labor is in danger of losing many of its gains. When greedy employers and their political representatives prepare a big attack against the labor movement, they always try also to start fights inside the labor movement to disrupt its unity. They try to set white against Negro, native against foreign-born, Protestant against Catholic, Gentile against Jew, Democrats against Republicans, and both against the communists. If they can start many fights within labor's ranks along these lines, then the trade unions are weakened. If labor can keep these fights outside of its ranks, then labor is strong and can maintain its progress, which brings progress to the whole nation. The strength of the trade unions lies in labor solidarity. White workers side by side with Negro workers, native with foreign-born, Protestant with Catholic, Gentile shoulder to shoulder with Jew. Those of all political opinions, whether Democrat, Republican, Socialist, or Communist. That's the way the labor movement was built up. And that is the way to keep it strong. That is the way to defeat the dangers that threaten American trade unionism. But to defend this solidarity of labor, it is necessary to reject the slogans about one group of workers being a menace to the others. I am not now the authorized spokesman for the Communists. But from 1930 to the middle of 1945, I did occupy that position. And that was the period of the great rise of the labor movement, in the midst of which the communists played an honorable and effective part and won a certain degree of influence in America. That influence has always been exerted toward actively organizing and solidifying the labor movement and uniting labor with all progressives. Communists do not control any labor unions, and do not want to control. Especially during the war, the communists made an indispensable contribution in showing in practice how the full defense of labor's rights could be combined with the most complete support of the war effort. Now that the war is over, the reactionary cry that the communists are a menace is being raised again. Discharged that the communists are agents of a foreign power because they advocate that America should be friendly and cooperating with the Soviet Union. It is put forward as a test of American patriotism that one should display hostility to the country of socialism. I think that idea is fundamentally unsound. I think the best American patriots are those who strive by word and deed to unite America with the Soviet Union in a common policy for a durable and prosperous peace. Among these are the communists, with a larger and growing body of non-communists. I'm afraid that those who attack the communists most vehemently are not fully frank with us. Usually they do not tell us what is a fact, that the main object they have in mind is to attack the policies of Franklin D. Roosevelt and Henry Wallace. They want to undo the work of friendship between America and the Soviet Union, which Roosevelt performed in the Tehran and Yalta conferences. Their attacks against American communists are only a mask for the larger fight to dissolve the Soviet-American alliance, which Roosevelt brought into existence. Mr. Murray, strangely, objects to the fact that the communists thought America could stay out of the war when it first started. But most Americans thought the same thing. He objects to the communists later changing their minds. But most Americans changed their minds, too. When Hitler invaded Russia, that change started. And when the Japanese struck at Pearl Harbor, that change was completed. So why criticize the communists at this late date for agreeing with the majority of Americans on this point? In every important country in the world outside the United States and Britain, most Democrats cooperate with the communists as necessary to the health and progress of their countries. This unity of the people's democratic forces, including the communists, has taken place on a non-communist program, proving that the communists have made the greatest concessions in the interests of unity. In France, a new constitution has been adopted and civil war avoided by the cooperation of socialists, communists, and the main body of the popular Republicans. In Czechoslovakia, the majority of the country is united under a communist premier on a non-communist program. In China, the Democratic League works with the communists. These examples give the main pattern of world political development. Wherever this pattern is departed from, there, the whole democratic movement, with the trade unions, receives a setback. The unity of labor on a world scale, as exemplified in the World Federation of Trade Unions, is also built on the cooperation of non-communists together with communists. Any kind of unity would be impossible on the basis of the false theory that communists constitute some kind of a threat to trade unionism, any more than Democrats or Republicans or socialists. We cannot afford to forget the lesson of how Hitler rose to power and plunged the world into a war which almost destroyed it, mainly by manipulating the Red Scare. In every country where this slogan has become a guiding rule, their democracy and trade unionism have been undermined and destroyed. The cult of the menace of communism is a reactionary myth of the same general political significance as anti-Semitism. It is unsound to argue that one must either be a communist or subscribe to the Red Menace. Franklin D. Roosevelt repudiated that obscurantist theory and thereby saved the world from fascism. Haywood Broun, the founder of the Newspaper Guild, repudiated that theory, and thereby built a powerful organization that has survived less enlightened leadership than his. When democracy is advancing and winning victories, anti-communist propaganda is pushed into the background. When anti-communism is again brought to the front, it is a signal of danger to democracy. It is a sure sign that reactionary forces are again on the march. This is the lesson of history. Labor and democratic organizations need to unify their ranks. This is the greatest need of the day. Americans should not allow political labels and ideologies to divide us into warring factions. We have to solve the enormous problems of post-war reconstruction, of building a durable peace, healing the wounds of war, getting men and women to work, providing food and clothing, houses and education, and all those things required for making a better life. To solve these problems, we must bring into cooperation people of the widest variety of political views, of races and religions. We must learn to unite people, not to divide them. Unity for progress against the reactionary forces that threaten to rise to power. Unity that rises above the differences of race, religion, and ideology. Unity to bring the century of the common man. This is the golden rule for all the democratic camp in which the trade unions occupy a central place. And this rule says an emphatic no to the proposition that we should erect special discriminations against communists as some kind of menace.